Merkel Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary is Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison? Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Iconic, Odyssey, Rockfin, Band.video, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thank you so much. We appreciate your amazing and continued support. Hey, speaking of that, the folks over at Iconic wanted me to let you know that if you are interested in getting a 10-day free trial to their platform, you can do so by clicking the link in the description. You can check out all the things that are going on over at Iconic. It's not just alternative media conspiracy type stuff. There's a lot of health and wellness, a lot of fitness, a lot of meditational type things. Obviously, all of David Icke's work. Macroaggressions has been there since the beginning, really. So we're grateful, and they're expanding. They're coming to America as well, so we're happy to have them. So try it out if you're interested. And look, let's be honest, 2021 and now 2022 are basically like running infomercials for getting yourself prepared. I mean, at this point, you're thinking, well, maybe there might be a supply chain issue, but it's not going to affect me. I hate to be the bearer of bad news. It's going to affect everybody. So start being proactive and start thinking about this in a way that's, you know, where you're making moves ahead of time and before everybody else does. You don't want to be the last guy to figure it out. And so our partnership with My Patriot Supply has been fantastic. They built a landing page just for us, preparewithmacroaggressions.com. You can click there and get discounts on 4-week supplies of food, 3-month supplies of food. They have seeds. They have water purification. They have air filters. They have all kinds of things, camping gear, a bunch of stuff that you might want to check out. So if you are so inclined, I'm going to put all the links, as always, in the show notes. I don't expect you guys to be writing down or taking notes. But if you are taking notes during my episodes, I mean, I guess good for you. You're probably the same people that keep score at a baseball game, you weirdos. So if you want to prepare on your own and just go to the grocery store and buy extra food, I definitely encourage that. We have a sponsor here. If it's easier for you to just go to the website, knock this out in 10 minutes, do that. If it's easier for you to just buy extra food every time you go to the grocery store, do that. Do them both. I don't care. Just think about this stuff. Be prepared. You want to be, you know, this is the situation where you're better off being a couple weeks or even months early than one day late. So you listen to this crazy stuff, you're getting information that nobody else is getting. So you're going to be thinking a little bit differently. Take advantage of that. My goodness. Also, hey, listen, Well, one of our favorite sponsors, Chemical Free Body, has been with us for the last year and a half now. Tim James, the owner of the company, has been on the show several times. He is fighting for your health. He is a geek for health. He used to be overweight and it almost killed him. He had an epiphany about 12 years ago. He put himself through this really important Hippocrates school in Florida so that he could learn more about health. And from that, Chemical Free Body was born. It's a fantastic opportunity for you to go take a look and see what they've got as far as vitamins and whatnot. You can go to chemicalfreebody.com/macro, and there you'll see the program he put me through, which was the detox in a box. It's a 90-day plan. I'm telling you, it worked. I'm showing you it worked. There's a video there. You can see my pants didn't fit after going through that. I wasn't trying to lose weight. It just was kind of a byproduct of this program for me. I flushed out so many toxins and so much junk that I lost 14 pounds. So some results may vary. He doesn't pitch this as a weight loss program, but look, it was a weight loss program for me, and that's all I can say. So if you are so inclined, you can go to chemicalfreebody.com/macro, and on your way out, use the promo code macro to save yourself even more. And of course, all of your support of our sponsors helps to support the show. Thank you so much. We certainly do appreciate that. And hey, if you are interested in helping the show grow, you can share it with your friends and family. There's a little button there. You can rate the show as well. Give me a good score if you think I've earned it. If you think I haven't, well, then just send me an email. Well, I'll tell you what. Our guest tonight is, he's just one of my favorite people in the alternative media. That's just all there is to it. One of the good guys. Mark Steves, he is the host of My Family Thinks I'm Crazy. He's the founder of Alt Media United. We're going to talk about that a little bit towards the end. Mark's here. What's up, Mark? Good to see you again.
Dude, it's an absolute pleasure and a true honor to be here on Macroaggressions. And yeah, man, that's really, really nice of you to say. I hope I could live up to those expectations.
Oh, you do. Yeah. You do every day. We chat all the time. You're a very positive force in this community. It's not, I really appreciate that, because we deal with some heavy duty topics and it's easy to get black pilled and think that it's all over and there's no hope. And what are we doing? And what's the point? And these globalist maniacs are going to get us, but you always have such a positive attitude. I'm very inspired by that. It comes across in your work, which is tremendous. And so I'm wondering though, like, I know how I got into this nonsense. How did you get into this nonsense? I mean, were you like me? Like, you're just interested in how it all works, or you read a book? And like, for me, I read Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John Perkins, and it broke my brain for a while. But was there what was your journey towards getting into this sort of, these sorts of topics?
Well, you know, it's definitely a long, long road, and I'll do my best to boil down my explanation. But, you know, I've been asked this question a lot, and I love being put on the spot every time, because it seems like every time I go into this sort of train of thought, I realize a new thing about myself. And as you were saying that, I can remember some of the earliest books that I read, middle school, elementary school. I was very interested in anything nature books, you know. That was kind of like my sort of, you know, and I was total geek, right? Like, didn't have any chance in sports, totally like in my room doing that kind of thing. I loved being out in the woods, loved running around and just being in my own imagination. So that was sort of, that laid the foundation. But then I found books about espionage. I found books about the military. I became really fascinated in why all this fighting was going on in the planet. And, you know, being born in 1994, I had just seen 9/11, you know, at third grade. You know, we were bust into the library and sat in front of the TV and we watched it happen on repeat as they, you know, decided whether or not they were going to send us home. And we got sent home. And ever since that, I really just, it didn't scare me because I was too young to know really the scope of what was happening, but I felt like the sort of patriotic reaction from my family in the years following. And I was very curious about the military and what was going on there. And like I mentioned, I had found books like The Art of War and, you know, one that the name is just too long to remember, but it's something Espionage and Spycraft Manual, something that, you know, someone in middle school definitely shouldn't have had. I mean, this thing had like techniques on how to jump over barbed wire, you know, how to like spy on people. I mean, it was really not the best book for someone my age to have. But you know what? My grandparents, they were nice. They took me to Barnes and Noble and they would get me a book every now and then, you know. So
you're buying that anarchist was kind of cookbook.
Well, there is a story about that. I printed that at the school library in high school, so there that came into play, and I don't think the librarians were happy with how much ink I used. But I just was always a reader, and as I got older, I started to sort of expand my interests. And I remember finding this book called The Secret History of the World by Mark Booth, and that was just really a mind-opening book, because at that time in my life, history was this very dense subject that I was interested in, but I was only interested in certain portions of it. And I'd never really had a full look at what history looks like, you know, outside of maybe like one of these timelines that tells you all the different eras, and who really even believes that anyways. And here's this guy telling me, no, it's Lemuria to Atlantis to, you know, Egypt. And then it's, you know, all of the civilizations following. And he sort of follows this spiritual line through history. And I found that really fascinating at, you know, 16, 17. And also smoking cannabis at that age, my whole world had been kind of turned upside down. I had really been wary of anything drugs. And when I realized, oh, this cannabis is not a drug, it's actually a tool, and it's expanding my mind. And every time I smoke by myself, my curiosity goes through the roof. And that's really where it all started, you know, just digging through the internet in a time when it wasn't censored. I mean, I remember a website called Stumble Upon, where I could click a category called conspiracy, hit random, and I would just go one after another of amazing conspiracy websites. I probably even, you know, found your book through doing that. Cause I remember, I don't know, maybe this was much earlier than that, but I remember your name being sort of in the fabric of the first few like podcasts, conspiracy podcasts that I started listening to. Cause it wasn't until 2015, 2016 that I had really gotten into podcasting. I don't know, maybe that's a little earlier than when you had really hit the scene. I'm not sure the dates, but I remember it's kind of surreal because for, you know, honestly, I'm not just saying this because I'm here. You were one of the first people, like, for instance, on Gray America's show or the Higher Side Chats, who I remembered, like, just off listening to, because there's dozens and dozens of people that these shows have interviewed. And yeah, I always, your interview always stuck with me for some reason. So anyways, I hope that wasn't too rambling, but that there was a lot that contributed to my interest in this stuff, you know?
Well, first of all, I'm flattered that you would say that. Yeah. I think the first time I really was doing, you know, interviews, my Octopus book came out in August of 2017. And then I started doing press for it later that year. And I think that the third interview I ever did was Coast to Coast.
Okay. Yeah.
And that was February 3rd of 2018. So from that point on, then after that, I started doing more and more. And then Macroaggression started in March of 2020. And right. You and I were emailing about that. I remember right before even the, I don't even think, well, maybe the show had just started, but I was emailing with Sam and Sam was putting me in touch with you. And so we were just kind of going back and forth. That was kind of how I first came across you. And look, I had the same thing. I found someone gave me a book called Everything You Know Is Wrong by Lloyd Pye. And I took a look at that and I went, what is this? This is the craziest book I've ever had. And then of course, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, that opened my mind. Then I went down that path and said, well, what is this Fingerprints of the Gods by Graham Hancock? I'm interested. I've been to Egypt. This is fascinating. Let me read this. And so when you do that, you start to realize, okay, all right. I feel like now I have to, you know, I went through all this schooling, took history classes and all that. I feel like now I have to go unlearn history so that I can relearn the actual version of history. And that kind of started me down the path, was that I just wanted to figure out how it all worked, because I was watching the housing markets implode in Las Vegas and reading John Perkins' book about the World Bank and IMF. And I'm going, oh my God, this is what is happening here, like on a smaller scale. So, and that leads you down the rabbit hole. I remember stumble upon, I remember used to do that too. You just, what am I going to get? Sometimes it's cool. Sometimes you get a great one. Sometimes you get something that you're not into. You just click to the next one. But I had a job where I sat in front of a TV or in front of a computer for like 8 hours a day, and there was nothing else to do. So I was watching David Icke videos, and I was watching Alex Jones, and I'm watching the history of money, and I'm trying to figure out all these things. So I get it, man. Once you get into this stuff a little bit, it is easy to fall down those rabbit holes. What's the first one that you really kind of like geeked out on? Would it be like that hidden history, like Atlantis, Tartaria,
Lemuria, really, that like stuff? The furthest back was like Ripley's Believe It or Not had a strange creatures section. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing that photo of I forget what do they call her, but you know, this, the Bigfoot, you know, I think the Patterson Gimlin film. So I think her name's Patty. I don't know, but it's a female Bigfoot. And I don't doubt that picture at all. I mean, I've seen a documentary about it, and I really, something about that stuck out to me at a young age. I think that was pivotal. You know, it's like, because at that age, I was really fascinated with nature and animals. And now here's all this evidence of these animals that mainstream science doesn't admit are real, you know? So there was my first instance of like, there's something that the mainstream doesn't want you to know about. And then from there, it just exploded. I mean, UFOs, the psychic phenomena stuff, not as much of an interest until I really kind of got into smoking cannabis, you know, because there's something about cannabis that offered this spiritual consciousness shift. Mm-hmm. That I was very much third dimensional consciousness, I'll say, for lack of a better term, for the majority of my life. And then cannabis in conjunction with martial arts really, you know, blossomed into this new, not new personality, but really a different personality than I had really. I really grew out of a big deep shell. Like I was in a very deep shell for a lot of my life, and martial arts kind of gave me this other perspective shift, because as soon as I made the transition to being like somebody, just an average student, to being somebody who had a reputation of like, oh, he could beat you up, don't mess with him, I just noticed like, wow, people's group mentality, you know, they're very much worried about what the group thinks. And I was too, but I noticed that dynamic, like people wanted to fight me when they knew they could beat me up. But then once I was somewhat of a challenge, it was like, no, we got to be this guy's friend, you know? And that was like a really odd shift too. Cause now all these guys who are like, you know, football players, and they're like, oh, Mark's on the wrestling team, he's one of us. And I'm like, I'm not really one of you guys. That's ball sports have never been my thing, you know? And so that was definitely like all to highlight the fact that I've been kind of a black sheep. And going into college around that time, I found the book, The Secret History of the World by Mark Booth. I was reading things like The Way of the Shaman by Michael Harner and all of the Carlos Castaneda material with Don Juan. And I ended up synchronistically meeting my own veritable Don Juan. I mean, literally, I was sitting on a bench in the New Haven Green, just smoking a joint, and I was wearing a t-shirt that had Sitting Bull on it. And this guy comes over and he looked totally out of character for anyone I'd ever seen in that area in my life, because, you know, he's this short, squat Native American dude, dark, dark red skin and thick, you know, jet black hair, you know. And I just, you know, I'm in Connecticut. There's not a lot of people that look like that around here. So it just, you know, it struck me, and he's looking at my shirt and he's like, oh, what makes you, you know, wear a shirt like that, you know? So we started talking about Native Americans, started talking about weed, cause I'm smoking, and he had some smoke too. And that's kind of like the beginning of a really cool friendship. You know, he taught me a lot about Native American culture, but he also taught me about conspiracy. There's a whole reason he moved from Arizona to New Haven, was to connect with the disinterred remains of Geronimo. Ooh. So for those who don't know, Prescott Bush in the early 1900s, robbed the grave of Geronimo, allegedly, and brought the skull and femur bones, as is their practice, to the tomb on High Street, which is a very sort of Egyptian looking building on a sort of one-way street through the campus that really only security cars drive down, and like people turning around. Like it's really like a sort of in the middle of everything but out of sight kind of street. And he would walk over there every day at noon, and he would stand in front of the tomb and he would scream Geronimo as loud as he could, and his voice would powerfully like reverberate through the, you know, old walls of this campus. And for those who have never been to, you know, Yale's campus, it's not like these modern university campuses with the big class, you know, buildings and all that. It's very old and sort of gothic looking stone. Everything has a carving into it. I mean, the symbols are endless along the, you know, old campus, specifically, you know, where the, you know, school has always been. The newer buildings look new, but there's a lot of a really interesting ornateness that you can sort of get the sense that there's a culture underlying this sort of mainstream culture. But I'm getting a little ahead of myself. So Amos, you know, he came here after being, you know, out of prison, and he was homeless, you know, and I was like, dude, you know, what do you got to lose? Why don't you just go in there and bust down the door and get the skull back, you know, bring it back to where it belongs? And he's like, no, that's not what it needs. You know, these people, they need to admit to their crimes. That's really what is going to sort of mediate and settle what's been kicked up here, you know? And one of the things that has happened in the history of since the skull's been taken to the tomb is there's been several attempts by different groups of people to try to get it back. The first time was met with a sort of privilege, sort of sneering, sort of very insulting. They gave them a child skull as if they weren't going to be, you know, aware of the difference, and said, yeah, here it is, you know, that kind of thing. And the group of, I don't remember the exact tribe, whether or not they were the same, you know, group of people as Geronimo or not, because this is sort of a multi-tribal issue at this point. I mean, Geronimo is one of the most well-known Native American figures in Native American history. And it's because he's such a fearsome warrior, which plays into what I'll get into later on about Skull and Bones. But yeah, Yale's never really A, admitted, or B, sort of, they've entertained attempts to get it back, but they've never actually done anything enough substantial to admit that it's there, right? Which is why this next part, they had a guy pose a lawsuit against George W. Bush when he was president because of his membership with Skull and Bones. In conjunction, I think the lawsuit included Yale somehow, and that was dismissed by lawyers. I don't know who did that, but maybe not the best idea to go after the active president with that kind of thing. I think it was more about the publicity of it all and trying to make an opportunity out of that. But what's curious is in 1928, the United States Army built a memorial over Geronimo's grave, and they covered the ground with cement, like a 6-foot by 6-foot wide big block of cement, and then built this memorial on top of that. So, I mean, that to me feels like it's a cover up. You know, this is after Prescott Bush, you know, has some success in government as well. So he possibly has some pull. Skull and Bones has had pull since the beginning. I mean, the founding members went on to be president. The other founding member, Huntington Russell, I think is his name, William Huntington Russell. He went on to be Connecticut's first National Guard president and set up the Connecticut National Guard. And since their founding in 1832, they've been very involved with military, politics, big industry. So Skull and Bones has quite the connections, we'll say, on a global scale. But, you know, I learned all about this in a really strange kind of personal way, you know, through this guy Amos. And I had no reason to, you know, think he was lying to me about any of it. And it was really sobering because at that time, conspiracy theories existed in books and online. You know, you couldn't just walk up to a building and like witness it with your own eyes. I wasn't really keen on the Freemasons yet, and they have a huge temple in New Haven. Not that I think that that's any indictment. I'm sure there's many layers to that can of worms. But as far as Skull and Bones goes, they're one of only 9 secret societies, as far as I know, that have ever existed at Yale. Some of them sort of evolved into more of what we would think of as just like fraternities, but the 3 that are sort of like the ominous 3, Scroll and Key, Wolf's Head, and Skull and Bones, they're, you know, basically they enlist only the best and brightest, privileged, exclusive, you know, people who are from establishment families, military families. It's very much a privileged sort of funnel into a position where maybe your, you know, decisions on, you know, certain things will be manipulated by the group at some point in time. Maybe not, you know. I mean, sure, there are some people that have graduated from Skull and Bones and gone on to be, you know, basically nobody, unless they're like working under black books or something as right, for the CIA. Who knows? I mean, they're just names on paper. But there's a book written by Anthony C. Sutton, and he found the basically the catalog of names of everybody who had been in Skull and Bones from the beginning in 1832 up until, I believe, the mid-2000s, which is when he released the second edition of this book prior to his death, and which I don't think is related, but, you know, who knows? I haven't looked into that.
It's funny you say that. I was just watching a video of Anthony Sutton yesterday. Yeah, talking about the Soviet, about how the U.S. Oligarchs, you know, the Fords and Carnegies financed, and the Rockefellers, and financed the Russians, the Bolshevik Revolution, how not just the Bolsheviks, but the Soviet Union, up and even including back when we were involved in Vietnam, that they were building these factories and huge facilities to manufacture cars that could easily be switched over to military vehicles. And of course, that's what they were doing. And he broke it down. Man, that guy was amazing in his research. And I don't know if you're familiar with John Rappaport, but John Rappaport, who has a website called No More Fake News, he's a prolific writer, puts out a blog, puts out 3 blogs a day, actually. And he's been writing a lot about Anthony Sutton. That's how I wound up reading about that. That's how his name wound up in my head. And then I said, well, I should look this up. And then someone sent me a video, and it was him. And now you're talking about him. It's some woo-woo synchronicity going on here. But I think his work was
it's he was funny 1925
to 2002, I think, is when he died, and he got into the things that we like, and it's nice to see, like, the video I saw, the interview I saw was 1980, and right. For me to go, man, that's 42 years ago, and this guy is breaking it down in a way that would definitely get him thrown off of Twitter today. So it's great to watch that. It's funny, I didn't know he did anything with Skull and Bones.
Yeah, that I think that's what he's best known for, but he has written several books on fascism, communism, yep. and things all like isms. That. Right. And yeah, very prolific guy. It's funny you mentioned the synchronicity aspect of it, because, you know, this is all this that I'm describing happened in my freshman and sophomore year of college. And I ended up dropping out of that community college in sophomore year because I'd really been like disillusioned and fed up. And I said to myself, I can make a career for myself outside of this system. I don't know how, I don't know what it's going to be, but I'm going to do it. It's kind of funny that I'm talking about it on the podcast now, because this is clearly what my life has become. And I couldn't figure out a better career for someone who, you know, as you can see, has a clear obsession with this kind of information, yeah. you know, with the books here. But, you know, I ended up having several different jobs after that. The first job that was sort of connected to everything, I was a Chinese food delivery guy, and I really fell in love with that sort of job, you know, and I don't know if I would be here if I didn't do that, you know, for multiple reasons. I loved it. But one day, this guy who I'd gone to high school with, someone who had actually sent me the link to Loose Change on AOL Messenger, if you remember that. Like,
oh, yeah.
So either that or MySpace, like way back then, he was on top of this stuff far more than I was. And he comes into the Chinese food place that I worked at. He's like, hey, man, what have you been up to? What are you doing? Like, what are your plans? And, you know, I told him I dropped out of community college. And he says, well, you know, I'm not in college either, but you should come to this fraternity that I'm a part of. I'm like, what? Fraternity? You're not in college? What do you mean? And he's like, yeah, it's cool. You know, it starts naming some of the people that are there. And then I'm like, starts ringing bells in my head. I remember like dropping a friend off there one time. And it was this like infamous party house on a campus, not Yale's campus, but very close to Yale. And yeah, I ended up going there, and like the first text before they initiated me into like the first thing was like, you're about to go down the rabbit hole. And like, I had never like heard that phrase at that point in my life. But I mean, I cannot go on a podcast without hearing somebody say it at this point, you know, or listen to one. But, you know, it's so weird, because one of the things that they kind of spooked us with as new guys, and this was just like a Animal House type fraternity, you know, really focused on partying and safe partying, you know, so we wouldn't get kicked off campus or, you know, in trouble with the cops. But we were already off of Greek life. Like, we weren't an official fraternity within the school's, you know, understanding. But either way, one of the things that they scared us with was like this story about how one day they went and stole a flag from the Skull and Bones, not their tomb, but where they sleep, where they stay, because they do have their own like sort of dorm area for certain members during their senior year. So they steal this sort of like Skull and Bones Jolly Rogers flag from this porch and bring it to the house and put it in the front window. And like, you know, the next week, these guys like come and knock on the door. They got like a black SUV and they're like, we want the flag back. And at that point, you know, the flag wasn't in the window. It was kind of just like, you know, a joke. They put it out there on display. And, you know, as far as I know, the guys that were in the frat back then, they were like rugby players. They were not exactly guys that were easily intimidated. Mm-hmm. So they were kind of gave them a little bit like, what for? And like, hey, man, this is our house. We're not, you know, we don't even know what you're talking about type shit. So, mm-hmm. But there was that sort of, you know, brush with them. And that put, you know, put a certain flavor in the air that I really appreciated, but I was sort of disappointed at the average person in the frats, like lack of care or concern with the reality of this. Cause I'm like, this is a real conspiracy. And like, we're kind of like a benign fraternity in the same sort of swimming pool as this really nefarious, you know, fraternity. And as much as, you know, my brothers had really no interest in learning about this stuff for the most part, that time in my life gave me a lot of like sinks and synchronicities that eventually led to where I'm at now. One of them was a good friend that I made in the fraternity, had a really high position, we'll say, at a bakery nearby in town. And he hired me as a delivery driver. So I start delivering for this bakery, and they had all these contracts with Yale. So I would go in the buildings and drop bread off every morning. And one of these buildings that I would go to every Tuesday, the janitor, he had kind of gotten frustrated with me knocking on the door so early. So he just was like, here, I'm going to show you how to get into this building, like a little sneaky way to get in. So, So I'm going in, I'm thinking, oh, this is cool. I'm sneaking in this building. Little do I know, this is a very interesting house. Okay. And I found that out on the day George H.W. Bush died, because as I'm walking through this house on that day, I look down at the newspaper and it says, George H.W. Bush, former resident of 88 Hill House Avenue, the exact address I was at, died today, right? And I'm in a house that George W. Bush, and, you know, whatever the wife's name was, Laura, was it? Laura Bush? Bush's mom or wife? I mean, there's three Bushes. So.
Yeah. Mrs. Crowley?
Yeah, exactly. We'll call her Mrs. Crowley. Where Mrs. Crowley stayed, I ended up, you know, being this like delivery guy, not only like delivering there, but breaking in pretty much, you know, like going through this secret back door. Right. And it was just like that plus many other moments really just like pushed me into having this sense of like something is happening here. You're listening to this stuff for a reason. And at that time, I was obsessed with Tinfoil Hat. Union of the Unwanted, I think, was like only just having a, you know, one or two, like you guys just got started with that. I remember that being something I was listening to and being excited about. And
involved with it.
Yeah. Well, 2018 was when that happened with Bush. And, you know, whether or not Union of the Unwanted was out yet, you had been on Tinfoil Hat.
Like, yeah,
Sam,
yeah,
you were in the mix for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just so surreal that like seeing Sam at this comedy show, giving him a book, you know, and then him asking me to be on his Patreon. One thing led to another. You know, I didn't ask him to work for him. He just asked me, you know, out of nowhere, and well, not really out of nowhere, but either way, you know, it's very surreal that now here I am kind of like doing this thing that, that I was very, very obsessed with. I mean, I got driving jobs specifically for that reason to listen to podcasts. I mean, I was an Amazon delivery driver up until the pandemic kicked off.
Man, I'll tell you, I think your story is really important for people to hear, because like so many of us, myself included, you know, you go through school or you grow up and people's adults always say to you, what do you want to be when you grow up? You know, it's like, well, what do I want to be? I want to be a professional baseball player, but I don't have the talent to do it. So I want to work in professional sports. That's what I wanted to do. How am I going to get there? I don't know. So we wound up, through a roundabout way, I wound up not being able to get in to that industry, even though I had great contacts and I tried really hard and knew the right people. I just couldn't make it happen. So we wound up going around it and building our own company and getting into it that way. A buddy and I did. And so I look back on my route that way, and it's kind of like the same route I had into the alternative media. Like I almost didn't really know how I was going to do it. I just knew that I was interested in it, and I was just, I'm going to figure it out. And I think there's a lot of people out there that get stuck when they go, how am I going to do it? I don't know. Well, if I don't know, then I might as well just not try, because I don't know how to do it. And it's like, no, keep going. because the path will illuminate. If you're on the right path, you'll start to see it. This person will introduce you to that person, and that person will introduce you to that person, and you'll wind up way down that path towards where you're trying to go. And you'll say, if I had tried to script this, there's no way. I needed to meet this random person at that one particular time. How would I ever know that that's going to happen? So my point is, like, you just start down that path and just have a little bit of faith and try to make things happen. But just understand that you don't have to know how to get from A to Z. You just have to know how to get from A to B, and then worry about going from B to C when you get there. And then, you know, because otherwise, just make it little incremental steps. Like if your goal had been, I'm gonna go work for Sam Tripoli, I'm gonna go book all his shows for him, and I'm gonna be the guy that everybody needs to, that would have, like, how would you have even dreamed of that? But you put yourself in a situation where good things could happen. You followed something you were really passionate about, and then people found you. That's the interesting thing, is that people will find you, which is, well, when that happens.
And
that's,
can I add to that? Because yeah, I love where you're going, and I think, you know, I should have gone maybe a little deeper into this when I was talking about cannabis and martial arts, but really at that time in my life, I realized the power of mind, you know, and the ability to overcome adversity, because that's what martial arts is. It's, you know, you're literally putting yourself against somebody. And, you know, the guys I was training with were 10 years older than me. You know, there was rarely ever someone my age interested in being in this particular dojo that I had, for whatever reason, gotten to. And I actually had my Sifu on the podcast, episode 98 or something like that. And it was a great conversation. Nice. But yeah, you know, there was this sort of like, you used the word faith, but I think awareness is just as important, because I did have a lot of faith in myself, but I was always very aware of how my mind was leading the way, right? And what I mean by that is, I think we all understand glass half full, glass half empty, and what that means to have that as a mindset. But I for a greater part of my life, I put that into practice. You know, I really tried to put that into practice. And podcasting was like this big, like wide open, like can of information that I, or can ocean of information that I could just dive into, you know, and, and I did that. And I'll give credit to where it's due, Grimerica show, man, with the synchronicities and what they talked about in their intros. It really started to connect with me, and I started to notice like the little synchronicities that were happening in my life while I was listening to these shows. I mean, because you're a delivery guy, you're pretty much like eyes on the road and then getting in and out of your van every now and then, you know, or very often depending on your route. But, you know, it was a lot of mind space, you know, and just kind of observing and being in your head. And I honestly felt like there was an interaction with the podcast, and I get the same feedback from my audience all the time, you know, and I'm really grateful to even be able to say that, you know, now that I have a show that is being listened to.
A great, you know, show, by the way, a really great show that people need to check. You just had David Icke on. You had Tony Merkel on. Tony Merkel is my partner on Macroaggressions. He's the engineer of this show. You had,
what's up, Tom? Tony.
What's up, Tony? you had Brian, aka Hotep Jesus, on.
Yes.
You know, I mean, these are some deep thinkers. These are some guys that have taken some time to think about this, and you've had them on. For people, need to check out. My family thinks I'm crazy for, well, sure. And just add that to your list of podcast podcast repertoire that you've got. Just throw that one in there. Go subscribe to it. And just check it out, you know, when you can, from time to time, because I think people are, like you said, sometimes you just want to dive right in. Sometimes you want to hit the shuffle button and just go, just give me whatever. All right, universe, give me whatever. And then you get Mark Steves and you go, all right, I'm going to listen to this episode today. And then it tells you something you would have never known. And you go, oh my God, this just, I would have never known this if I hadn't been listening, and I would have never listened if I hadn't been listening to Macroaggressions, and he went on and on about you or whatever. next thing you know, you're like trying to figure out how you even found out about this information. It's like, I don't know. It's just, it found me.
Right. Well, and speaking of great guests, you've been on my show twice, so folks can go and check out those conversations where we learned a little bit more about you. And what's so interesting about how the podcast was sort of making its appearance, the podcasting world that I was listening to was sort of making its way into my life through little synchronicities here and there. And, you know, listening to Sam's show, I'm sure everybody has this experience at some point. You know, he'll say something and you'll be like, no, Sam, it's this, you know, whether it's mispronouncing something or maybe just getting something off just a little bit, you know, like you see where he's going and you're like, you know exactly what you're trying to say, but you fucking missed it just by. So right. I was that guy. I was listening to his show like that. And it's so weird that, you know, it happened this way to where now I'm like literally giving, you know, putting people in the position to present this information to him, you know, maybe information that me, I mean, who am I? I'm just another guy. Not that I'm like the authority on anything, but it was really odd for me to like be like, the universe was like, oh yeah, all right, you think you know what Sam needs to hear? Here's your shot. Give it to him. And you know, what's funny is I was the guest on his Zero podcast for the third episode. And he's like, you know, hey man, this podcast is new. This was a great episode. Thank you so much. He's like, you know, I'd love to have you back on again, but who do you think I should have on, you know, next? Like, do you have anybody, any suggestions? And Charlie, I sent this guy like a 20, 30 long list, 30 people. Well, I went through my podcast apps and I'm like, okay, this guy, Sam needs to talk to this guy. You know, I really was like, wow, Sam wants to know who I think he should interview, you know? And he was so impressed that, you know, he asked me if I could do that for him and he would pay me. And it just one thing led to another. And I had a podcast of my own at that point called The Bud Triangle. I only put it on YouTube. I only did it in person with my friends. And that was a huge limitation. And then now doing what I do with Alt Media United, I'm always talking to people about like how they're going to start their podcast. Cause naturally people hear what I'm doing. They maybe hear parts of my story and they think, oh, Mark's the best guy to talk to about this. And I'm always honored. And I always give as much time as I can when people hit me up. But, you know, for that point in my life, you know, I was definitely not like motivated, you know, and it, I had the Bud Triangle. I was doing it. I was relying on my friends, you know, and Sam kind of put it to me like, dude, you know, if you're going to be working for me, you need to have your own show. What are you doing with your show? And I told him, you know, the name of my show one time. And he was like, what does that mean? You know, anytime you get that, you're like, okay, there's problems. I got to explain myself. So, you know, one thing happened that really gave me the title of my show. Outside of everything in my life, all the social awkwardness of being a conspiracy theorist among normies, you know, outside of that, there was this day where I was just so pumped that Sam had given me this opportunity. And my family was at this, you know, sort of family gathering. And I go up to my aunts and my cousins and I'm like, yeah, I'm working for Sam Tripoli. This guy, he's a comedian. He lives in California. And they're like, so you're not delivering packages anymore? Like I had just committed like career suicide. Like, oh no, my amazing job at Amazon was over. I ruined my life, you know? So I just like looked at myself and I looked at them and I'm like, oh my gosh, my family thinks I'm crazy. Like they just like they don't get it, you know? And that's as I was driving home that day, I was laughing about that. And I was like, that's the name of my new podcast. You know, it's my family thinks I'm crazy. Perfect. And it really, you know, it kind of all happened that way. And, you know, I was lucky enough to have you on the show early on and the guests have just really like shined more and more. I don't know what it is about like the synchronicities of it all, but one guest leads to another in a really funny way. Like I had Michael Wan on my show, who's excellent. If you haven't had him here yet, I definitely recommend.
We haven't had him here, but we've had him on Union of the Unwanted and he is tremendous.
Right. And, you know, I had him on my show and then, you know, we ended up striking up a friendship. He had me over his house. I've visited him several times. He's a couple states away, but given what he researches, it's very interesting. And I wanted to go down there and check it out. And now I co-host a podcast with him. So like, this is, you know, this is just like the magic of intention. You know, I had the intention really early on to make use of this information, because for a time, you know, my parents would be like, what the hell are you doing with your life? You know, and what's it worth smoking weed, or what's it worth buying these books, or what's it worth spending money on crystals? And I would be like, I'm, you know, this is my mind, my soul that I'm cultivating, you know, and it had really no physical, tangible benefits, unfortunately. And I'm sure there's ways.
Hard to quantify that in education. But an education is the most important thing you can do, but it's really hard to show the receipts for it. I mean, I guess you can, I guess you can show your student loan debt for it.
But like, and that's why I dropped out of college, because of the student loan debt. I didn't want to put myself in that position. Luckily, I avoided that, but yeah.
But hey, you know, my mom has been very supportive of everything I do, but I remember telling her in like, this had to have been 2015 or so, 2014, maybe. I was telling her about some new conspiracy I'd discovered or something. And she said, this is all really interesting. It's fascinating that you know about all these different things, and it's interesting. But she goes, can I ask you just a real easy question? She goes, what do you plan to do with it? And I was like, I didn't have an answer. It had never crossed my mind that I needed to do anything with it. I just thought I was interested in it. I just thought I was accumulating this information. It was the first time that it had ever occurred to me that I might have a role in this. And I started to think, well, what am I going to do? Am I going to direct a documentary? Well, I don't really know how to do that. What can I do? And I said, well, maybe I could write. And I go, well, I know how to write. So I started that, and that became the octopus, was that conversation with my mom. And then everything else that I've done has come from that. So it came from that one conversation with my mom. That's nice. What are you going to do with it? It's like you looking at your family going, my family thinks I'm crazy. and then you go, well, wait a second. If it hadn't been for that moment, you wouldn't have had the podcast name. You've committed to that. And now we're down the path where you've got Alt Media United. By the way, so I'm going to put the link in the description of the, in the show notes, of course, for everybody. But if you're listening and you're at a place where you can get on, you know, open up another window, go to Alt.
Oh yeah. And we're mobile friendly. Our website's pretty cool on the mobile browser too. So if you're listening to it on a phone, go ahead and check it out.
MediaUnited.com. And that's like
can I just say real quick, Charlie, please. I don't want to give the impression that, you know, my family didn't have any reason to think I was crazy, because they really, I mean, they did. I mean, they have some good reasons to think I'm crazy.
We're all crazy. When you start talking about this stuff, you by default sound insane. We all do. There's no shame in that. But this project, this website that you've built, I think it's a good place if people want to just go there and bookmark it, because you're going to take a look at like the main image there with all of the logos of all the different podcasts. And you're going to be like, I like that one. I like that one. I like that one. This is where you can go for all of it. It's like a centralized place to find all of the alternative media podcasts in one spot. And a bunch of people.
We see it happening, you know, more and more people getting censored. And this was definitely a hotter topic when it all got started, really. I mean, it still obviously is, but I remember being a guest on the Union of the Unwanted and having that sense that I communicated earlier that like, wow, this is so cool. There needs to be like an actual website for this, you know, because outside of the group format of a podcast, you know, at that point in time, there was like really only a couple places that I had known about, and they were only like, they were like networks, you know, like you do a show on Forbidden Knowledge News. They're part of All Media United. That's somewhat of a network to some degree. And, you know, I'm really stoked that Chris kind of joined forces with us, because there's a bunch of awesome shows on there that I've yet to make All Media United pages for.
I do a show with Chris and Corey and X-Cube called Day Zero. Which is in that Forbidden Knowledge News network. So yeah, I know what you're talking about. So you took like you grouped up multiple networks into one spot.
And Fringe FM, which I'm pretty sure you're also
I'm on I'm on there too. Yeah, right. Joe Roop is great. You know what I've learned, and this can't go on forever, but up to this point, the people that I've met in the alternative media have been the best people. The nicest. I don't have issues with people. Chris Matthews, he's hysterical. He lived right down the street from me when he and Corey were there, and I used to go over to their house and when they were doing their shows and everything and hang out. And then we wound up doing a show. What a great guy. Joe Roop, an amazing guy. Sam Tripoli, one of my favorite people in the world. I mean, I text with Sam every day. And so I've met the nicest people, and I think we all have one thing in common. We don't know it all. Well, two things. We don't know it all. We don't pretend to know it all, but we're on this journey. We're trying to figure it all out. And the people that want that knowledge, it's like a certain type of people. It's a certain breed of person that's like, I'm not satisfied with what I'm being told. I feel like there's more to it. I got to go figure it out. And someone's like, well, why? Why do you need to figure it out? And you're like, just because I have to. Right. I just have to. I just need to know what's really happening. Not because I'm going to fix it necessarily or anything, but it's this desire. And I get emails all the time from people that are like, you have opened my eyes to this stuff. I'm so grateful that you would think that I opened your eyes to it, but I really didn't. I just put it in front of you. You opened your eyes to it. I had nothing to do with this. You know, the people out there that we're just leading them to this information. It's up to them what they want to do with it, you know, and you can be just a consumer of it too. That's totally fine. Nobody says you have to go get involved. But once my mom asked me that simple question, I thought, oh my God, I actually have to tell everybody about this stuff. I felt like, I'm not religious, I'm not a religious person, but I felt like what I assume it must feel like for people that have like a religious awakening, and they're like, I have to tell everybody about this. It's so beneficial to my life. I want to tell everybody. But I also know that those people can come across as totally insane. And I didn't want to be that person, even though I maybe am a little bit. but I wanted to see, like, can I explain this in a way that doesn't sound like too evangelical about it, or too like tinfoil hatty or anything like that? Can I maybe talk about this stuff in a rational way that doesn't sound so crazy? So that's been my challenge, is to try and take crazy information and make it sound less crazy so that normies can understand it and sort of work their way up.
I hit it right on the head of the nail sometimes. I don't know. I can be very like sharp with my words, and I think it's a certain like thing that comes out of me, and it's why I have that reputation with my family, because I know you've told a story on my podcast about doing something similar, but you sort of like, we as conspiracy theorists, we're just seeing this whole nother world that for us, what's just like second nature for at some point to other people is like, whoa, where is this coming from, you know, because he'll just pull this information out with just the most confidence, and it just really takes people back who are open-minded in a lot of cases. They're just not aware or familiar of any of this stuff.
I would love to do a survey with the people that are alternative media podcast hosts, and maybe also just like the listeners, to find out what percentage have had psychedelic experiences, because I would be willing to bet that number is very high, because the people that I know, like, I was a totally different person before I tried mushrooms in college. Mm-hmm. After that, I felt like a filter was lifted off, you know, or I put the They Live glasses on a little bit. Not to say that I had it all figured out, but it opened me up to the possibility that everything that I currently knew was wrong. And that's a big moment when you go, okay, I don't know anything. If I can have one of these, you know, really profound trips on, you know, whether it's psilocybin or ayahuasca or DMT or whatever, it just makes you realize, okay, if our world is just what we see with our eyes or hear with our ears, then we are really limiting ourselves. There's so much more out there. And then it just kind of, I think it maybe opened me up to the possibility that I wasn't getting the truth in history books. And I was at this like really stuffy school, university, where everything's very like strict, you know, strict and by the book. And I just felt out of place there. And so the idea of like opening up your mind, and I know, and I'm not like drugs are bad or drugs are good or anything like that. It's like, make up your own decision, you know, make up your own minds and stuff like that. Be safe. Don't be stupid. But the idea of the psychedelic experience that I had, and then I didn't have any for a long, long time, but it really sent me down a totally different path. I don't think I would have been on had it not been for that. Did psychedelics ever play a role in your, I don't know, awakening?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, cannabis being obviously a mild psychedelic, yeah. I used it to a high degree. I mean, I've probably smoked every day, multiple times every day for the past decade, Charlie. Yeah. So I don't know whether that gives you more respect or less respect for me, but I feel like there's a certain
Graham Hancock did too. I mean, Graham Hancock notoriously did that for 3 decades.
Right.
You know, so and his work is, in my opinion, on the Mount Rushmore of writing.
Thank you. I definitely didn't can't say I was inspired by that by Graham Hancock particularly. Actually, Eddie Bravo is funny. I've met Eddie Bravo, and you know, before I ever smoked weed, I was very, very much against all of it, anything intoxicant, and it was Eddie Bravo and Bruce Lee, because I realized, oh, these guys are smoking pot and getting high and doing martial arts. You know, at least Bruce Lee did to some degree, like ingest cannabis during his workout routine. And it's funny because I met Eddie Bravo before I worked for Triple E, but it's just, again, how these things like circle back and how these synchronicities come full circle. But yeah, I think outside of cannabis, the few mushroom and acid experiences that I've had have, in a way, because I don't think that I've used these things the same way other people have. I mean, I told you what books I was reading, Way of the Shaman and yeah. Carlos Castaneda's books, which, you know, are semi-fictional, so you could take those with a grain of salt. But Robert Anton Wilson, who actually interviewed a friend of his recently on Illuminati Confirmed, the founder of the Church of the Subgenius, joined us on the Illuminati Confirmed, which was very interesting, kind of like the anti-cult leader in a way, like very culty, but also like the opposite of a cult. But anyways, yeah, so I would do these sort of like introspective experiments with cannabis, and then I took that further with acid and mushrooms. And, you know, one of the most profound acid experiences I had started with me lighting a candle in a pitch black room and then meditating and setting my intention. And then as the day went on and as I tripped harder, I went up this mountain nearby and I made my way to a spot which I later learned more recently was considered sacred to the Native Americans who lived around here. But I made my way over to these rocks and sat on this rock and just was in awe of nature and this big, big buck, you know, big deer with big horns comes. And we just had this moment of locked eyes, you know, and I'm sitting on a rock that's probably like 6 feet off the ground, you know, sort of near a ledge. So he's just staring at me like, what is this thing? You know, and we had this just amazing experience. And you know, I definitely like supplemented those experiences by listening to Alan Watts and other sort of things like that. I really wish I had been into podcasts at that age, because I wonder what would happen if I did that now. But yeah, I definitely, you know, would listen to like Alan Watts meditations and Terrence McKenna and other things like that. And And yeah, I've had some very memorable experiences. That last one I just explained, my mentor, Amos, the gentleman I was describing before, he explained that to me as possibly being a spirit animal encounter. Like that was, you know, a real animal, physical animal, but like meant to be sort of occasion. And I really do believe in this sort of world of consciousness, you know, like our consciousness is not limited to our bodies and we can interact in these ways with the world around us. And I don't know that most people who haven't experienced a psychedelic trip really fully understand what I mean by that, you know, yeah. Because, you know, psychedelics kind of show you the fluidity of your own consciousness. And if that's true for your consciousness, how can it not be true for, you know, normal waking consciousness, not supplemented by psychedelics, even if it's in a very minor way, very subtle way, it's happening. So who knows, maybe the amount of psychedelics I'm currently doing in the sense of like smoking every day, and like, not that I do psychedelics very often, but I can say I've probably done them maybe yearly for the past couple of years, once or twice a year. Maybe there's a certain level of psychic residue that's left behind, or
maybe,
or ability.
Well, I think for those that have not done psychedelics, to like a little example of the, to give you an idea of what's out there, is like if you've ever had a bad vibe, if you've been in a place and you just get a bad vibe, and there's somebody in there that gives you, you're picking up.
I can give you an example of that happening just today. I was in a grocery store. I walked by this guy who was waiting to use the self-checkout, and I could just see it on him that there was something going on. And I go and I'm going about my shopping, and then I come back over to the self-checkout spot, and like the Whole Foods employees were like on him, like watching him. And sure enough, they had like, you know, they were doing that, one of their stings where, because they'll watch you, you know, and keep up with you if you go in there a lot. And I used to work there. You steal, you know, a certain amount, then they come and they sting you, you know, they catch you while you're in the act. But I could sense it. I'm like, there's something with this guy. He's going to do something weird. And that's what it was. You know, they went and chased him out to his car.
Yeah, man. There's something, I mean, I hate to get too woo-woo, but there is a vibrational energy. And I think that the people that have done psychedelics maybe either have been able to harness that, or they recognize it when they see it now. So I think that it's not to say that, you know, that you have to do psychedelics to have these sorts of unusual experiences. But if you have like a real big deja vu, that's a very kind of familiar feeling. And it just opens you up to the idea that, well, you know, there's our conscious mind, and then there's this subconscious mind that's doing a million other things, and it might be talking to the person in the next aisle over. You know what I mean? We don't even know what all is going on there. So it's right. It's for people to be open to these,
to add another
of weirdness.
To add another one to the mix, I going back to that same time period, talking to Amos, I think freshly like sophomore year, I went to the library and I was specifically looking for books about Skull and Bones. And I found a book called Fleshing Out Skull and Bones. And it was made by Chris Milligan, who I've had on my podcast.
Trying day.
Yeah. Like, you know, a couple, you know, however many years later, I end up talking to this guy who
I did too.
I was talking about my public library.
My second book, I talked to him about publishing it. And yeah, I had a good talk. He's a great guy.
Really great guy. And so it's little things like that that stack up. But, you know, to bring it back to Skull and Bones before we completely end it, or, you know, put a bow on the topic, I did a walking tour of the sort of areas of the campus that I think are of interest and connected to it, because I had a conversation with someone that I'm almost certain, I'm mixing up. Maybe you're familiar. Are you familiar with Paranoid American at all? No. Comic book? So they make some really cool like conspiracy themed comic books. And they have this comic book, Geronimo's Grave, that after having Thomas, the creator, the owner of the comic book company on my show, I was just looking through his catalog and I'm like, oh, wow, this is exactly the story I've been talking about for all these years. Mm-hmm. So I end up, you know, buying a bunch of copies from him. And this was the beginning of March. So I'm like, all right, so 322, that's Skull and Bones' special number. Here we are, March. Let's do March 22nd, you know, and get everybody there. And Greg Carlwood, who I know you're absolutely familiar with, you've been on his show a couple times. Love, he has this really awesome meetup, which I'm sure you should use if you haven't already.
I've checked got it bookmarked.
Out. Yeah, very cool.
Fireside chat meetups, yeah.
I love it, and I love that that is a thing. I think Alt Media United is going to create something similar on our website soon, or just link it, you know, because No Agenda does the same thing.
Yeah.
And Greg's a part of the cooperative, as a matter of fact. But yeah, so I set that up, and I was like, you know what? This is all kind of like happening. I got to do this. And really, I think that it's in line with kind of what we need to do about these sort of problems. It's not that, you know, we need to break down the tomb door and get the skulls out of there. And, you know, that's not going to solve any problems. What I think is most important is that we do these sorts of awareness ceremonies, you know, like the seven really awesome people that showed up that day. We all sort of were just aware. You know, we are bringing these ideas, these things that have happened behind closed doors, these facts that, you know, become allegedlies on Wikipedia. You know, we're speaking them in the realm where these people have walked, where they have haunted, you know, and I think that there's something to that in the collective consciousness. I don't know what the result of that would be. Hopefully we see something happen where, you know, this sort of thing is recognized. But I was going in the archives, the newspaper archives, and I found this story of a Native American named the Apache Kid, who was an outlaw out your way in the Western Rockies there. Mm-hmm. And these Chicago businessmen were down on some kind of hunting party, and they saw him and ran into him, and they ended up following him and sort of surrounding him, killing him. They go back a month later and grab his skull, and they send it off to Yale University, Skull and Bones. You know, and this is all right in the newspaper, you know, and it's like, to the maybe the Westerner reading a newspaper at that time, some like prospector or farmer or something, he's like, oh, Skull and Bone Society, that sounds like the place to deal with that sort of thing. No, like they're doing dark Freemasonic, maybe Knights of Templar type rituals in the, with those skulls, you know, they're drinking out of them, they're turning them into ballot boxes. In 2005, there was an auction of Skull and Bones collectibles that went for $20,000 to a private European collector, and they had a skull and femur bones. The femur bones were engraved with the name Thor, is they all like to have their own special nicknames. You know, they've been, you know, Odin, Bushes were Gog and Magog, and, you know, on and on and on. But they turned this skull into a ballot box that they could use in their little, you know, whatever their elections are within the fraternity. But yeah, that's the type of stuff they're doing with the remains of people like Martin Van Buren, Geronimo, a curious Russian woman who has a bar named after her, the Russian Lady, on the other side of town. So there are all these sort of interesting connections. And I've even spoken to a man, Peter Shampoo, recently, who talks about a ley line connecting Boston, New Haven, where Skull and Bones is, where this sort of story I'm talking about takes place. I'm not from New Haven. I'm from a town nearby. And then we have New York City, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., and maybe another city in Georgia, I think Atlanta, all on this ley line that Peter Shampoo calls the City Ley Line. And it connects to the pyramids in Mexico, where all of these sacrifices happened.
Oh, shit.
And Peter talks about how this is possibly, you know, some sort of energetic residue that's left along this line that these cities are tapping into as they're built in sort of proximity to this line coming from this pyramid. And, you know, all of these cities have a reputation for crime and all sorts of bad stuff. And that's a big part of what Walter Bosley talks about with ley lines, and how there's this like negative energy that can be left behind. You know, there's a murder that he talks about that happened on the 33rd degree of latitude that, you know, connects to all these places. And so, you know, what that means for what we have going on in New Haven, I don't know. But one of the weirdest things that Amos told me about Skull and Bones is that on 322, the same day that we did our walking tour, mm-hmm. they go down to the tunnel and they do some sort of ritual and they
jerk off on each other.
Well, much darker than that. They allegedly kill a child and they consume his heart at the top of this tower in New Haven as the sun rises. So, you know, there's sort of connections to the Aztec sacrifices because that was a big part of the Aztec sacrifice. They would pull the heart out and, you know, this energy from the heart would be transferred to the sun in their eyes. So who knows if there's any corroborance there, but let's also connect the skull thing because we have all this collecting of skulls. What did they do at those pyramids? They had a wall of skulls that they would collect. So, I mean, I think whether or not there's a direct physical connection, maybe very hard to prove and also probably less plausible. But I think what we're seeing is this sort of line of energy that has a certain influence on which groups proliferate in that area. And there are other groups certain groups that know and have this knowledge of what the energy lines mean and what they do. And they place their buildings along this line for certain reasons.
There's a lot of thought that goes into that. And we know about the layout of Washington, D.C. We know about the owl. We know about the, you know, all of that symbolism. It's tempting to sort of be dismissive of it and go, well, that stuff's just nonsense or who cares about that? But the point is, it matters to them a lot. It's very important to them. It's the biggest deal in the world. The numbering and the layout and the Freemasonic components to it and the names and all that stuff. You know, like you said, Thor was engraved in the side of that bone. If that's your name at Skull and Bones, then that's your identity. You know, you become that. And so let's talk about some of the guys that we recognize from Skull and Bones, the names. We've got Prescott Bush. We've got George H.W. Bush. We've got George W. Bush. So all three lines of the Bush family. We've got John Kerry. We've got Stephen Schwartzman. We've got,
sorry, I'm looking for my list. I have a list that I put together.
You've got a list? Yeah. It's a pretty detailed list. I remember looking at a list of 30 names on it, and I think I recognized 10 of them. You know, it wasn't like looking at the Committee of 300's list when you go, oh shit, I know every single name on this list. They're all worse than the last one. But with Skull and Bones, it was like, I recognize some of the names, but not all of them. But then again, I didn't research to see who those names were that I didn't recognize. For all I know, they could be running some multi-billion dollar corporation I've never even heard of before. So, I would guess that you are, when you're in that group, you're in that group for a reason. You're in there. Well, you're at that school for a reason. This is the equivalent to them of arranged marriages or something like along those lines, or interbreeding, keeping it in the family. They're all going to be wealthy, powerful. Is it true that they're granted $250,000 each when they leave and that money is given to them to go start doing whatever it is they need to do?
That and a grandfather clock is the supposed legend. They're given a grandfather clock. And it's important to mention, you know, Skull and Bones is not like your average fraternity that I was a part of that's geared towards a four-year membership. This is you're tapped when you're a junior, you're in the group when you're a senior, and then you take on, you know, all of the responsibilities of the group after you leave Yale University, when you become a patriarch, right? This is the name you're given once you graduate. So you're a knight, and that's where your name comes from, right? We have, you know, Odin, the knight of whatever BS, you know, they talk about in their little ceremonies. But yeah, it's ostensibly like an after universe, post-university society. That's what it's geared towards. And they even have a private island that they own in the upstate New York Thousands Islands region, right? And from my research, you know, trying to connect the dots and weave in the sort of spiritual nature of things, that area was known as the Garden of the Gods by the Iroquois Nation and the people that lived in that area. And over and over and over again, we see this kind of connection with Skull and Bones and Native Americans. And what I, you know, interpret that as is like, take yourself back to that time when they were founded, 1832. We have Alfonso Taft and William Russell, who were very much interested in the Hegelian philosophy that they were learning when they took a trip to Germany. I think Russell studied at the University of Berlin and was very enamored with everything he was learning there. And this sort of states is the, you know, ultimate leader, the God statism sort of philosophy. And then we have, you know, America at that time, where the West was not settled fully. You have all of these tribes that are either warring or cooperating with the government and, you know, being taken from their homes and brought somewhere else. And all this stuff was happening. And I believe, you know, especially when you look at the military connection, specifically with things like, you know, like we said, the National Guard, you know, there's a sort of emphasis on what's going on here in the country in a militaristic way. I think that points to their connection to this sort of spiritual domination, you know, cutting the spiritual cord from the Native Americans so that we as the colonizers inherit, not we, me and Charlie, but right, no. As the colonizers inherit the spirit of the land, right? And that's where the myth making of the United States really comes into play. And that's why, you know, as we were saying before, Skull and Bones, you know, they're not just limited to like the executive branch, legislature, you know, think tanks, banking. They're also in the sectors of the church and education, media, publishing, business, industry, commerce, law, you know. So there's a web that they have sort of been cast over or that they had cast over the United States. And, you know, we know, on a show like this, groups like the Bilderbergs, the Council of Foreign Relations, Trilateral Commission, Bohemian Club, and so on. But Anthony Sutton, in his book, he shows that the order has sort of, and this is the sort of secret name for Skull and Bones, the order or the Brotherhood of Death, the order has penetrated all of these groups. They're a part of the Bilderbergs. They're in the inner circle of all of these types of groups, Council on Foreign Relations, and so on. So, and we're talking about, like I said before, East Coast dynasties, the robber baron types of that age, whose families have gone on to have a tremendous amount of influence. And, you know, before we're naming some of them, I mean, obviously John Kerry and George W. Bush are the most famous component, you know, opponents towards each other, both, you know, Skull and Bones members. I don't know if they were even a, and they might have even been a part of the same class. I mean, that if that doesn't make you scratch your head, I don't know what.
Well, Tim Russert asked the question and then ended up dead.
Well, yeah, I didn't know that, but that's I don't doubt that. And the FedEx, you know, founder of FedEx, founder of BlackRock, founder of you know, a number of influential corporations. And when we're talking about, you know, people in the right places, think about what FedEx does, right? And think about how the original, you know, Taft, Russell sort of trust, this Russell trust, they were all, you know, families that were making money off of shipping illicit drugs into the country, you know, opium and the like. So I don't think that it's any coincidence that Yale is now a big medical industry, you know, medical school, and they have a big pharmaceutical industry building, you know, with Alexion, which is a big pharmaceutical company right in town, one of the tallest buildings in town, bigger than the Chase Bank building. And, you know, that's where the power is with this group. You know, it's in the big drug market, the military, and influence within government.
Yeah. And it's very real. It's not, you know, it's not conspiracy theory. It's a group of guys at Yale doing this for people that are unfamiliar with Skull and Bones. Let's wrap up with this. Illuminati confirmed. New show.
Yeah. So Illuminati confirmed this. And Alt Media United, I should say, is, you know, an awesome podcast cooperative that I put together with the intention of raising free speech and giving people an idea of this sector of entertainment in a way that's like sort of more official, because all over the place, you know, we're banned, and, you know, even Linktree bans people now, you know, and it's like our website is really like a super bona fide Linktree. Like when we make you a page on Alt Media United, you're basically getting a really cool Linktree that has your podcast that is in a player, videos, whatever you want on your page, I'll put it there. So if you're listening and you have a podcast and you're not already a part of Alt Media United, don't hesitate. Get in touch with me. You can do that through the site. And one of the ways that, you know, one of the really cool benefits of Alt Media United is the networking, you know, meeting all these cool people. And somebody that I met early on is a gentleman named Chris from the Mensa podcast. And he introduced me to a dude named Juan from the One on One podcast.
I'm doing a show in a couple days.
He told me about that. He's very excited. And Juan and I and Chris, we really hit it off, man, when we did our first like sort of group podcast together. That it was Chris's idea. He wanted to introduce me to Juan, and I enjoyed talking to them. We just hit it off, joking all about Nick Cage and all kinds of crazy shit. So we came up with the name Illuminati Confirmed because of one of Juan's sound clips that he has. It's just like, oh, Illuminati Confirmed.
Is it like Isaac Weishaupt doing it or something?
I don't know who's doing it, but either way, it's just like a funny little sound clip. And then we had the intention of like interviewing people and sort of putting them to the test, like putting a little bit of pressure on them in a fun way, you know, right. Like we say, like anything you say can and will be used against you for humorous and satirical purposes, you know, like that's kind of where we start the show. And we've had some people on that, you know, have responded in weird ways to that, which is interesting. And we've also had some people on who, we realized in hindsight, like, oh, everybody we've had on has had a pseudonym of some type, you know, that the name they're using, aside from one person, is like not their real name. So we're like, what if we just go and interview people who don't have like their real names out there? And like, that's what, you know, we're putting like, who are you type of like, so right. I don't like that type of ambush scenario, but right. It is fun to put people in that sort of situation, obviously with no malintent, because we are friends with everybody we've had on the show and don't have any negative feelings towards anyone that's been on the show or will be on the show. I mean, I can't say for sure, but we'll see. But yeah, it's a fun conspiracy show. And I think we all hit the topic from different angles. Like Juan is very knowledgeable in one realm. I'm very knowledgeable in another, and Chris is knowledgeable in his own realm. And we all bring our own dynamic to the show. So that's one of the many podcasts I've been doing lately. You know, I work for Sam Tripoli, so I have to sort of follow in his footsteps in some sense. So I do have 5 podcasts to plug here.
Please do. Let's like hear them.
Sam does, you know. So I do Illuminati Confirmed, which you can find on my RSS feed as well as Juan's RSS feed, podcast feed for those who don't know, Tech Talk. And obviously my show, My Family Thinks I'm Crazy, where you can find that. You can also find another little like side show that I do with Dave Zed from Generation Zed.
Love
it's called
Dave.
The Elemental Philosopher Forum. He's really smart, really knowledgeable, again, he's a nice in his guy. Own area. Very polite, you know.
Very polite. He's
every
the most
conversation
polite
we have starts with an, I'm sorry.
He's Canadian. Yeah, right, he's the sweetest guy in the world. I get such nice texts from him all the time. I just think he's the best. And I like the show, too, by the way. I like the Generation Z show. I mean, I love that UFO. I'm into all UFOs. I don't pretend to know anything. Like, I don't have any sort of special knowledge or anything like that. I just am fascinated with the topic. So
that's the same way I am. I'm very sort of, you know, I'm not good with all the technical details that he's just like really brilliant with. So when we do our show together, we take a look at an element on the periodic table of elements and see what kind of strange information we can find about it. And I usually find some like alchemical information, maybe some occult science information. And Dave typically finds something connecting to like weird military tech or like some crazy like ooh part that fell off the meteorite. So
that's a great show, man. That's a real, I didn't know you guys were doing that. That's a really cool idea. What's it called?
It's once a month. It's the Elemental Philosophorum, kind of a mouthful, but you can find it in my RSS feed and Dave's RSS feed.
Okay.
It's at this point in time, we're doing it just once a month because we're both very busy. But the idea is to have guests on moving forward. And he's got some pretty interesting like doctors and scientists that he wants to talk to about this stuff. So I'm excited to see where the show goes. And then Michael Wan, who we mentioned before, I do a show with him called Your Handbook for the Apocalypse. That comes out once a month. And that's a blast. You know, Mike and I always have interesting conversation. You know, we try to keep it topical and like up to date on what's going on in our lives, but it's not really about our lives. It's really about like what we're thinking about and, you know, maybe strange things that happen to us in between. Like, for instance, Mike had this presentation that he gave to a group of Pennsylvania Freemasons, and it was a little anxiety, you know, we had some anxiety about it. And I ended up driving down to sort of be his like bodyguard in a way in case the shit hit the fan. Right. And
he wasn't going to tell them something they wanted to hear, I suppose.
Who knows what could have happened, but just the circumstances were enough to make us all a little like, you know, worried. So that was a fun time. And we talked about that on the show. Everything was fine. The Masons were all just normal dudes, as I kind of expected, underwhelmingly, of course, but it was fun. And did I say five? Yes, five. So now I'm the co-host on the Free Thinker Society podcast with Mike Romanelli. Mike Romanelli, for those who don't know, is business partners with Sam Tripoli. They co-own the Dojo Comedy Club in New Jersey. Sam owns a dojo in LA as well, or near LA. I've never been to California, so I don't know where's what. But yeah, so that's something I'm doing now. We just started. I've been on the show as a guest a bunch. I've been in studio. They have a really cool podcast studio in the restaurant that also has a comedy club in it. And it's just, you know, it's a blast. And I love going down there because you never know who you're going to see. I mean, I've met Gino Bisconte, I've met Anthony Cumia, I've met a bunch of, you know, interesting comedians down there. There's definitely so many more. Obviously, I met Sam Tripoli there, but I knew him from before that.
Yeah. Sam has been a thread that's run through both of our lives as well, because I asked Greg Carlwood to hook me up with Sam because I wanted to send him my first book. And through that meeting, I wound up in LA with him and we got along really well. And then that turned into Union of the Unwanted with Midnight Mike and Ricky Verandas. And that's, you know, again, nothing I could have planned, nothing that I could have written a business plan about and say, well, in year three, I'll be introduced to Sam Tripoli, who will then do this, you know.
Right.
You just have to kind of set that intention, say, I'm going that direction. I'm going to make it happen, whatever it is in your life, you know, whether it's becoming like the CEO of where you work or being like running like a small at home business or whatever. Just how am I going to do it? I don't know. I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to figure it out.
Have that positive awareness to recognize it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think that's the biggest thing that I can say. If there's any advice, you know, from the short 27 years that I've been on the planet that I can give someone, is really like learn to tune your compass, that is your heart and your will, to positive, you know, in a positive direction. However, whatever that means for you. And absolutely right. Like, your life will find you, you know, the life you want to be living will find you.
It certainly will, but we got to put ourselves in a position to succeed. We gotta do the right things and not come from a place of fear. Mark Steves, you're the fucking best, man.
Thank you.
Anyone that wants to check in with Mark, all of his links will be in the description. If you enjoyed this episode, take the additional step right now, you bastards, of sharing this with your friends and family. Thank you all, and I'll talk to you soon.